And we're back here, and we're back here with Randy Vanderwater. Two people that know what's going on or went on during World War II is Randy and I. And he was here most of the time. So, and he's going to talk about it next Tuesday night at the Moss Center. Randy, what are you going to talk about there at the Moss Center?
Well, thank you, and good morning, Juke, and thank you for having me. We're going to talk about what was going on in Holland during the years that you were involved in the service and in the places that you were. We're going to tell what was going on in Holland, and we're starting out with the year of 1940. And first of all, introducing the fact that Hitler invaded Poland and, of course, the Netherlands in 1940, which affected us directly, and we started relief programs here. We're going to talk about that, and then we're going to keep it chronological, and we'll go from 1940 through 1945 and cover the when the war was over and what was going on in Holland on the night of that President Truman announced that the war was over.
Now, in 1940, a lot of the factories around Holland started to run things that were pertinent to the war effort.
They certainly did, and there were several. And one of the first was Holland Furnace, which was making armor plate, and started that in late 40 and 41. Also, one of the first ones was Chris-Craft, was making the landing boats. And then later we had Holland Racine Shoes making combat boots. And Holland Hitch got a contract in 1940 also to make their pintle hooks, which resulted in they ended up making about 25 million of them by the time the war was over.
Wow.
They also made hitches for Jeeps. And Western Machine Tool also made military material for both the Army and the Navy. And then Hart and Cooley was making mortar shells, and then later in 44, Fafner Bearing took over a major portion of Hart and Cooley and was making ball bearings. Precision Parts was also making ball bearings. And then Jessex made a contract with the company out in Chicago. They were called the Victory Company, and they were making sub chasers here in Holland. So yes, the factories were extremely busy.
Now, as a side, I worked at Dunn Manufacturing for a while before I went in the service, and we made gun mounts for M4 tanks.
Okay.
And I worked on those, and then when I was over in combat, I saw some of those M4 tanks, and I thought, I might have worked on that thing.
Probably, right. I see Holland immediately became directly involved with the war. And, of course, the draft was started in 1940. And also another thing in 1940 were the fact that when the gentlemen left, 80 of them left Holland 126 Infantry and went to Camp Beauregard in Louisiana. And they were not knowing that a year December of 41, there would be Pearl Harbor, of course, but they went for a year's training, and most of those gentlemen ended up in the South Pacific, and in the Battle of Buna was their first combat.
I have a call here, Randy. Good morning, you're online with our guest.
Yeah, good morning, Randy.
Morning.
Yeah, you have to take a furnace drop in there.
Have to take what?
I didn't catch that.
You left Baker Furniture off the list.
Left Baker Furniture off the list.
Yeah.
Well, let's hear about Baker Furniture.
They made glider parts.
Glider parts.
Yeah.
I'm sure we're going to hear about that. I'm glad that Juke shared the Dunn story, too, because there's just many things that were going on in the community.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. So the factories were busy. Everybody was employed pretty much in Holland.
Right, yes.
Wanted
and
to be.
And one of the big things, too, was that women were being used for the first time.
Yes.
Now, my research has showed that as far as Rosie the Riveter, we had people who were comparable to being Rosie the Riveter because Fafner hired women. A major part of their payroll was women. Holland Furnace was hiring women. Fanna Doctor was the first woman employee at Fafner.
Really?
And most of those companies also received E awards because of the wonderful job that they did.
Yeah.
Getting the materials out on time, getting it on the train, and getting it to wherever it had to go. And so we had E awards given to Chris Graff and Western Machine Tool were examples of the, they've got even more than one E award for the work that they did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they
starting in 43 and 44.
And many hours sometimes.
Yes, that's right.
We have another call here. Good morning. You're on the line with Randy.
Yeah, I think Chris Graff made a lot of landing craft on there for...
Chris Graff made landing craft. Yeah.
Yeah, because I had an uncle that worked there, and he said they kept them to the... When they had the Normandy invasion, I guess they used a lot of them down there.
Yes, they did. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right.
And some of the... Chris Graff is a good example because they were getting national publicity in their ads showing the landing craft that they made.
Yeah.
And as the United States was becoming, starting with the invasion in 44, those pictures were all the national magazines, Life Magazine, Look Magazine, Liberty, and all those magazines were carrying those full-page ads from Chris Graff. And those, as the gentleman said, those landing craft were being made right here. Yeah.
That's amazing, huh?
Yes.
I rode in one of those boats, too.
I know you had lots of activities that you did while we were home, and I ended up, because I was started working in at one of the resorts, Wakazoo Inn, in 1944, and that was probably received the job because all of you fellows were gone, and
so
we were hiring teenagers. I started out cutting the grass at Wakazoo, and... a gentleman who was wounded at D-Day, who had formerly worked at Wakazoo Inn, and so he returned, had gone to Percy Jones Hospital, and then was able to rehab here. And so he took over my job as the lawnmower man, and I went in the dishwashing department and spent the rest of the summer there, and did that also in 1945. I was washing dishes when President Truman told us the war was over.
Well, I was on KP D-Day. And I didn't like that very well.
No, none of us liked KP. That was something we didn't like. Yeah. I just want to mention about, you mentioned Tuesday's meeting. And what happened last year, I usually do a program annually for Jeff Reynolds and the Holland Historical Society.
Right.
So last year I did a program. He called me the next morning and said, "What are you going to do next year?" Talked to my wife, Mary, about what we could do and what kind of a program we could put together. And I thought, why not do the home fires? What was going on in Holland? So we worked hard on that. And I had coffee one morning with the late Claire Pott and Dr. Claire Van Weeren. And Claire Van Weeren's dad worked for the Holland Furnace Company, was an outstanding salesman, and he had all those fire pots from the 40s.
Oh, really?
So that I used those, and they had so many things in there that were part of... First of all, it was defense bonds, buy defense bonds. Then it was buy war bonds and all these kinds of things. And so I used a lot of that material, and as that got started, and my wife, I would pick the pages that I would like from those fire pots, and she copied them and then later scanned them so that our two youngest granddaughters, Nicole and Alexandra Stamm, could come over and... take those scans and make the PowerPoint, and that's the program that we have. So,
it'll be illustrated.
Yes, right. I have more than 200 pictures, and so we're looking forward to that to show Holland some of the things. Also, what was going on at Hope College? The ASTP was here in 43 and 44. It was just 5 months, but it was quite something to see these servicemen marching around on 10th Street. So
I got in the ASTP at the University of Illinois. And some of the men from Illinois were transferred up here.
I see.
Mm-hmm. And when I came home on a furlough, I met them on the street.
I see.
Uh-huh. They said, I said, "How do you like Holland?" He says, "They roll up the streets at 9 o'clock at night."
from what I've read, and a book that was put out by Dr. George Zeidema and Eileen Nordstrom about Hope at the Crossroads, The War Years, was very helpful in my research, too, because they interviewed... several of the women who were here at Hope College at that time, and I got to know those gentlemen, too. In fact, my research shows that five of them married people who were at ASTP here.
Mm-hmm. One of them married Myra Fleiss, who I went to school with.
Okay, yes, uh-huh, and she's at the Rest Haven Community Center right now.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, uh-huh.
Yeah, she'd be getting older.
Yeah, yes. Well, I did, excuse me,
Go ahead, Randy.
I did want to mention one thing. We're going to have it at the Moss Auditorium, which is located right on the corner of 11th and Columbia, but 11th Street doesn't go through, and so the parking is the thing that I'm concerned about, and I want to mention a couple of places to suggest to people who'd like to hear the program. Where the tennis court is on 13th Street, there's some parking there, but at the present time, with Hope building two new buildings, the Jack Miller Music Center and the Kreisinger Arts Center, the parking is difficult. So I want to suggest that you can park at what I just mentioned near those tennis courts. Also, I'm suggesting that people go to the DeVos Fieldhouse. That's a block away, a block east. People can go to the west side of the campus. They could walk across the campus and then to go from where park near where the chapel is on College Avenue and around there. But that will be something that hopefully will be resolved when they get there. And
I have another call here for you. Mm-hmm. Yes, you're on the line with Randy.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the line with Randy.
Yes, is this Trading Post, south of the town?
Trading Post is on at 11:30.
Okay, but this can I call the right number to discuss something?
Well, we are talking right now with Randy Vanderwater, and we are in the middle of an interview. So if you call back after the 11 o'clock news, okay?
Okay.
Thank you. All right. So they'll get a full program of what went on in Holland during World War II.
Right, yes. And because I did the research that I did, I visited with Jeffrey a few weeks ago, and we talked about next year, and Lord willing, I will do a second part two of what was going on in Holland those 5 years, because the thing that a lot of us remember, of course, were the scrap drives. We had the silo in Centennial Park, filling that with the scrap drives.
And
with
we have another
metal
call here. Yes, you're on the line with Randy.
Well, good morning, Drew. Good morning, Randy. Can I tell a little story?
What's your story?
Well, my dad was working for Chris Craft when World War II started. And he was making 10 cents an hour. And then, of course, they got into the war making the landing boats, and then he went up to 25 cents an hour. And then eventually he took a mechanical drawing course from Dick Martin. And then he got a job at Continental Motors in Muskegon during that time where they were making tank engines, and they, because he could read blueprints and make measurements, he went to a foreman at $2.75 an hour.
Very good.
Oh, yeah. Good. And then he bought a house.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you
have
for
a good
the
day,
story.
Guys.
Family, hometown, heartfelt service that exceeds your expectations, not your budget. It's a promise we've kept for over 100 years.
And maybe we better take a quick look at the weather, too, while we're taking a moment out here. And Holland's Hometown Forecast, brought to you by Hop In in downtown Fenville, Pizzas, Grinders, and Specialty Appetizers. And the outlook is for windy with morning drizzle with a high of 42 today. Tonight, a mix of rain and snow with a low of 31. And tomorrow, a few clouds with a high of 41. Right now, we're looking at 41 degrees here in the Tulip City. And we're here also with Randy Vanderwater. And we're talking about World War II and what happened at home during World War II. I remember having to put up with less sugar, Randy. That really bothered me.
How we'll ration, everything was rationed, and how it went in book one and book two and book three and book four, and all the things we could do and or not do, and the A card, the B card, the C card for the automobiles, no tires, and the things were just, as you say, sugar was one of the first that was rationed, and I show a cartoon in one of the Chicago papers that was indicated the fact that we were going to be rationing sugar, but that was something also, and also one thing that my dad was working for the employment service at that time, and I remember he came home, and I'm a teenager, and he said, we're going to have prisoners from the who had been captured in North Africa coming to Holland, and that at the time was when, as we talked briefly, well, during commercial, when they were coming to Weller's Nursery,
right.
And also the ones that I remember came to H.J. Hines. They came either on a olive drab bus or in a truck, always with a guard, and they came down 15th Street and were there for the duration, and were very successful workers. And they were good workers from what I talked to the people at Hines when I did a book on Hines a few years ago. They mentioned that people who were still at Hines remembered the prisoners coming, and they lived right near the Elgin Dam, where there had been a Roosevelt during the Depression had one of the federal buildings had been built there. Also, the CCC stayed there in the 30s, and so the buildings were still there, and that's where the prisoners were. They originally came from Fort Custer.
Good morning. You're on the line with Randy.
Hi, Randy.
Good morning.
My father worked at Hines Company during the war, and they had the big doors, you know, on the side of the 16th Street.
Right, yes.
And we as kids used to climb up there and talk to the prisoners. And one day my dad came home from work, and one of the prisoners had made a carving set, a beautiful carving set that he gave me. That he had carved out for me. And so I used that a bit because I was working with wood and stuff at home. And I took a chunk out of my finger.
Oh, ouch.
Well, that's the last time that I saw the carving set. And I wish to this day that I had kept that carving set.
Yeah.
But it was not good. My dad was Alvin Heiss.
Oh, I see.
And I know Randy knows him.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it was an interesting thing, you know, that one of the German prisoners had made that just for me.
That was not something, yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing the story.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Another thing about Hines that I discovered in my research when I did the Hines book and talking to people from Hines, the gentlemen who came here as prisoners had to go home, or not home, but back to where they were imprisoned in Allegan area. And they had to peel potatoes like your KP, and so they mentioned it. They mentioned it to the people at Hines, and they saw an onion peeler that Hines used every day. So that the manager, Mr. McCormick, after Mr. Hoover at Hines, made that onion peeler available to those gentlemen, and the Hines Company drove it down to Allegan.
Oh, really?
And the rest of the time that they were there, they had this onion peeler, which we'd peel potatoes.
Pretty
so
good.
Good story.
Pretty good.
And there we are at war with the Germans.
True. And some of those prisoners came back to America after the war, I believe.
Yes. A fellow by the name of Linderman came back and was living in Byron Center, and the I went over to Byron Center to try to interview him, and he came to a coffee shop in Byron Center. But the days I was over there, I never did actually meet him, and I'm not sure if he's living anymore. But he was somebody that came back and married somebody from Western Michigan.
You know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. All right. What else you got there in your...
Well, there were five...
Call.
Excuse me.
Good morning. Good morning. You're on the line with Randy.
Yeah, good morning, Duke. Good morning, Randy.
Morning.
Just wanted to tell Randy that, you know, over the years, ever since I was a boy, I heard of Randy, and just like to commend him on his efforts. Putting so much about Holland. I don't know anybody that does what he does, and I hear his name. I think, boy, what a guy! You know,
right.
One of the first guys that I ever heard was your name that knew so much about Holland. That's
very good.
Very commendable. Good luck on Mark Center.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
And I think we have another call coming in. Good morning. You're on the line with Randy.
Yes. I was just wondering, were all the prisoners from the Allegan area, were they all German, or was there some Italian prisoners, too?
To my knowledge, they were all German, and the ones that I saw were blonde hair.
Okay.
As they went by in the truck.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you. A lot of them were in the Rommel Tank Corps.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
And
they were young, too.
Yes. Young, very young. Mm-hmm. All right. What else are we going to hear on Tuesday night?
Well, there were five people at Pearl Harbor on the day of the attack from Holland, and I'll talk about them. And one of them, Frank Verano, is still living.
Really?
And I've been emailing him, and we've gone back and forth while I was doing this program. And his name is Frank Verano, and he's 96 years old.
Hmm.
And I've enjoyed visiting with him through the email. And so I was just going to mention that. I'll mention those five.
Yeah, well, that's
and,
good. That's
and
good.
So, the other four are all gone. But
okay.
And
good
Fred
morning.
Birch died.
Morning, you're on the line with Randy.
Yeah, Randy and Juke. I just want to thank both of you. I used to volunteer at Holland Community Television. I had Randy on, and we talked about stuff. But just both of you gentlemen, I appreciate all your history and the knowledge you have of Holland and just this community. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
When Randy and I get together, we talk old times.
Right, that's for sure. Yeah.
All right.
Doing the Sentinel News, we saw each other every day.
That's right, we did.
Yeah.
All right, and there's a lot more about the World War II that Randy has in his mind.
Yes.
And some of it's illustrated, and you'll see those at the program on Tuesday night. And it doesn't cost anything to get in. We should tell folks that, right?
No, that's right. It's free, and we welcome anyone. And it's the Holland Area Historical Society. And we're going to tell some stories and a lot of anecdotes. And we've got a few surprises, too, that I'm going to pull on you Tuesday night that will be entertaining, I'm sure.
Uh-huh.
So I'll just give you a little hint of what that's going to be.
So, All right. So a surprise party, too. So.
Yeah, right. Uh-huh.
So. But the gas rationing and the tire rationing was really something to contend with during the war.
It was, and you know, we could drive at 14 in those days.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of friends whose dads were in small businesses, and they had trucks and things like that. We rode around in that, but my dad didn't let me drive the car. And that was something I know that when I worked at Waukazoo, when I did come back into town, I either hitchhiked or there was the ferry. I could grab the last ferry coming by on Saturday night. Stopped at Waukazoo,
oh,
and I could get that 11:30 ferry back into town.
That was
but,
something.
But it was, yeah. So,
okay,
yeah.
Got a call. Okay. Yes, you're on the line with Randy. You're on the line with Randy.
Hey, good morning. Randy was going to repeat, and maybe he did already. I missed a little bit. Who the other four men from Holland were? I'd be interested in hearing their names. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, well, Fred Birch was an ensign in the Navy. Harvey Hopp was an ensign in the Navy. Ellen Stevenson had married a gentleman in the Navy. She was from Holland and was living with him in the in Honolulu and at Pearl Harbor. And then a gentleman by the name of Nyheis was the other one. He was living at Schofield Barracks. His first name was Glenn, and that's the four that were there, and they all mm-hmm. have had stories, and I'll go into a little more detail at the program about those four. But I say I was interested in just knowing that Frank Verano was still alive. I don't think he plans to come back to Holland. He lived on 22nd Street. I lived on 22nd Street also, but I didn't happen to know him. No, he was older than I was. And,
uh-huh. Well, it looks like we're out of time, Randy.
Okay,
thanks so
fine.
Much for being here this morning.
Fast half hour.
Good luck on Tuesday night.
Well, thank you, Duke, and thank you for having me.